Good evening, everyone, and welcome to a special Easter edition of the Common Anomaly podcast. I'm your host, Stuart James. Joining me today, Clayton James. How's it going, brother?
It's going good. I'm happy to be back.
Excellent. How are you feeling this week? Did you get sick?
I'm okay.
You're okay?
I'm okay.
Just okay?
I'm getting by.
I'm still sick. I actually got worse after we recorded last Saturday. I'm glad we decided to go ahead with recording last Saturday because, yeah, it was all downhill. It moved into my chest, and I've just been coughing all week. It's been awful.
Oh, that's okay. People have been coughing on me all week.
Oh, it's terrible. I feel like everybody's got it right now. But anyway, I feel better. I feel totally fine. I don't think I'm contagious or anything anymore. I think I've still just got that grossness in your chest. So I'll do my best not to sniffle and cough into the mic here. But yeah, feeling good. Ready for this episode. So what are we doing today? What's the plan?
We are going on an adventure.
Yeah?
To the ghost towns of Alberta.
Yeah, that's right. We got all excited about ghost hunting. We were so inspired by our previous episode and our interview with Shelby Wilson that we decided, hey, why don't we try our hand at ghost hunting? So we've been researching that all week. I think both of us have spent a bunch of money with what little disposable income we have on ghost hunting tools.
Not a bunch of money. You know, I stopped short of buying the thermal imager.
Excellent. Yeah. That would be fun to have just for...
Yeah, but it cost more for just that one thing than all the rest of this stuff I have in front of me. I have scattered on the table in front of me.
Yeah.
All my ghost hunting gear. Well, most of it.
So actually, why don't we start there before we get into... Yeah, and I'd love to get some audience participation on this episode. We're going to go over a bunch of different locations that we've researched around Alberta that we maybe want to visit in terms of a first ghost hunting expedition. But why don't you just walk us through what you got on the table there in terms of equipment? Like, where did that rabbit hole lead you this week?
Yeah. So the first thing I got, it's your most standard ghost hunting gear. It's called an EMF meter, and basically it measures electromagnetic fields. It'll detect where your Wi-Fi is, where your, you know, electrical outlets are. It is believed that, you know, spectral entities generate these electromagnetic fields. So if you're, you know, out and investigating an area for ghosts, you'll want to sweep the area with this, and it'll detect hot spots, basically.
Mm, it looks pretty cool. I like the little... It does look a lot like the kind of Ghostbusters.
Yeah. You picture like the Ghostbusters in the first movie, and when the Ghostbusters get their first call and they're kind of investigating that hotel. I think it's Egon. He's wandering around with this little meter, kind of scanning the hallway, and he's saying, "Oh, don't mind me, just sweeping for valences." It's basically that.
Yeah. Oh, it looks pretty cool, too. What else have you got here?
What I got here is a spirit box.
So when you first mentioned this, I was like, spirit box, what is that? I pictured something like a trap or some kind of vessel that you trap ghosts inside, but it's not that at all.
It's not used for trapping ghosts. It's basically a ghost radio.
Okay.
You use it to talk to ghosts.
Okay, so this is for getting, what do you call them? Brain fart.
EVPs. Electronic voice phenomena.
There we go. Yeah.
So this thing, it's actually a more recent invention than I thought it was. This was actually first created, this device, in 2009. It was invented by a man named Gary Galka, and he created it after his daughter passed away, and he was looking for a way to communicate with her.
But EVPs have been around a lot.
Oh, yes. Similar devices have been around for a while, and people have found all sorts of different ways to capture.
Because theoretically, you could use any radio, right?
Yeah.
I think the way they used to do it is you just have like a portable radio, like you have there, tune it to in between a broadcast station, so you're just getting static.
Yeah.
And then the idea is that static leaves opportunity for spirits to kind of intrude and speak to you directly through the static.
Kind of. And basically all this is it's a modified radio.
Yeah.
And what it does is it will scan through very rapidly different radio frequencies. And what's supposed to happen is, you know, the voices of the dead are supposed to emerge through the static as a way that they choose to communicate. You know, you'll usually catch little bits and pieces of dialogue as it just scrolls through all these different radio frequencies.
Right.
And this is, you know, as they say, how ghosts will communicate with you.
Yeah. So both tie into the electromagnetic spectrum. So it seems to me that EMF, electromagnetic frequencies, that are the electromagnetic fields, that could be a connection to the spiritual plane. Maybe that is the spiritual plane.
Maybe. But, you know, I got this this week. I was playing around with it. Got some interesting results myself.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of spooky stuff. Why don't you tell that story?
Yeah.
That
was good. So I first got it, got my little Amazon package, and I was very excited to power this thing on and try it out. So you turn it on and you're supposed to ask it questions, and the spirits are supposed to respond to you. So you turn it on, and I wanted to open with something simple.
Yeah.
So I just said, "Hello, is anyone out there?" And you just get back a lot of static, like just waves of static, like. But I got one word. I got a one word response, and that word was many. And then it just went back to. So I'm like, well, I'm going to turn
that's
this
freaky,
off.
That's freaky, yeah.
I'm gonna set this aside.
Yeah, I would be printing the return label, like, immediately after that. I was like, okay, back to Amazon you go.
But I kept, every day I would come home and I'd just kind of idly turn it on and I'd ask it a question. And it was never anything very specific. I was never feeling particularly creative right after getting home from work.
Yeah.
I would just turn it on. The next day, I turned it on and I just said, "Spirits, how are you doing?" And again, I got a few words this time. I got angry, lonely, panic, and then a bunch of screeching sounds. And I go, "Oh,
doesn't sound good at all.
Doesn't sound very good at all. I'm going to turn this off again."
Okay, so let me ask you this. Now that you've established, supposedly, some level of contact with the many spirits that are sharing your apartment, have you experienced anything outside of using that equipment? Has it enabled any other direct interactions?
No.
Notice anything spooky in your apartment happening?
No, not really.
That's good.
Not
That's
really. Good. I mean,
you don't want to open.
There's
a door.
So much going on in there already. You know, I was scanning the apartment with this EMF meter.
Yeah.
And you know, it found the Wi-Fi. It found all the electrical outlets. Yeah. They're all haunted.
Yeah.
My copy of the Necronomicon made this thing spike.
Oh, interesting.
Enough.
Just a book. Why would a book have an EMF spike?
Well, clearly it's got some spirits attached to it. There might just be like some wiring behind the wall, like right where that is on the shelf.
Oh, that's right.
That's possible too.
Yeah, you got to remain objective here.
Yeah. So, lots of potential there.
What else you got?
Honestly, just my third attempt at using the ghost radio was actually on Thursday night, and I came home. And I asked again, you know, "Spirits, how you doing?" And I got back the response, "Doesn't matter."
Aww.
Well, that sounds very melancholy.
Sounds depressed, yeah.
And that kind of got me thinking, I'm not really using this thing properly because I'm projecting my own bias onto
what you hear.
It's reflecting my own emotions back to me. Like that day I came home and I got this very angry sounding response. I mean, I was feeling kind of pissed off when I came home from work that day.
Yeah.
There was some office drama going on. I was involved in it. I don't involve myself in such things. But I overheard some things that made me kind of angry. I was pissed off about it when I came home. And I got a very angry response out of the spirit box. You know, on Thursday, I came home from work. I was feeling pretty blue on Thursday. It was.
And you got a very melancholy response from the from the box.
Yeah.
That's interesting. And I mean, EVPs are always so subjective, and I always feel like that's kind of, that makes it less interesting from a paranormal investigation standpoint. I always thought EVPs are very, because they are so subjective, and you're not usually getting a very clear sound, so you're left to try and interpret it in some kind of way.
Yeah.
Right? So there's a lot of subjectivity that comes in. Into play when it comes to EVPs. So for that reason, I don't really like them. But it makes me think of a very interesting connection happening here if we're talking about, because a lot of paranormal phenomenon, particularly poltergeist and ghost phenomenon, do seem to be connected to human the human emotions that are involved in some way.
Yeah.
And so if emotional states can impact the electrical magnetic field in some way, then maybe your own emotions, what you're picking up is just your own, like you say, a reflection of your own emotional state on the background EMF field in your apartment.
Yeah. Or the other way of looking at it is, you know, if you're feeling angry, you're opening yourself up to, you know, angry spirits.
Kind yeah. Of yeah. Coming, for sure.
Coming towards you. There's that angle too, but there apparently I'm not even using this thing properly, because you're supposed to do as much as you can to remove your own bias when using this. The proper way to use this is with two people, and one person is listening in on it with noise canceling headphones, while the other person, unheard because noise canceling headphones, is asking the questions. So you're supposed to just blindly listen to whatever words are emerging from this and completely remove your own bias. That's the proper way to use it.
Right.
I haven't tried that yet.
That sounds like a pretty good control method, at least to start with, to establish a baseline kind of thing. Okay. Any other kit you got here?
Yeah, I've got, I also got, you know, again, I didn't spring for the thermal imager, but I'm very into photography, so I wanted to experiment with different light sources. I don't have them all here, but I did bring the black light. Basically, if a spectral entity makes contact with something, it might leave behind some ectoplasm, which will be visible under the black light. I also have an infrared flashlight.
Okay.
I already have a bunch of infrared filters for my camera. Basically, an infrared flashlight will just help throw some extra infrared light on whatever I'm photographing. And the theory is that, you know, ghostly phenomenon, it'll interact differently with visible light and infrared light and UV light. So it's always helpful to have as many different light sources as possible and take photographs of you know, any hot spots.
Right.
With these different filters and different light sources.
Okay. Interesting. Sounds good. Okay. Well, I didn't want you to be the only person to put together a ghost hunting kit, but it didn't make sense to duplicate purchases on everything you were acquiring. But I did have the thought, I noticed as we were kind of keeping tabs on our process through this week, you were acquiring a lot of digital advanced equipment.
I mean, not really.
No, but they're all electronic. They're all electronic devices. Yeah. They're all based on EMF. So I thought I would try and contrast and go the other route. So I tried to acquire all analog, old school ghost hunting or divination equipment. So I got myself a pair of divining rods or dowsing rods.
Yeah, how do those work?
And a pendulum. So divining rods or dowsing rods are basically two copper rods in kind of an L shape, you know, and you hold the short end of the L in either of your hands. And, you know, if you think about dowsing, people use them to locate water. You'll just walk say you're trying to find a spot to dig a well or whatever, yeah, right? Yeah. You're familiar with this concept where you'll be walking around on your property and holding the rods directly in front of you facing forward. And if you're over water, supposedly they will swing towards each other and cross.
Okay.
You can also use this as a method of communication, where you, very much like the spirit box, where you'll just kind of address any spirits or entities, what have you, that may be occupying your space, and you can ask it yes or no questions. And if the rods cross, that's a yes. And if they go wide away from each other, that's a no.
Okay.
And you can establish a basic dialogue back and forth. So I did try that out. And honestly, it did freak me out. It spooked me out a little. And honestly, I don't mind saying it had me in tears within a few minutes because I established contact with Phoebe.
Oh, okay.
Which still triggers me. I know it's been a while, but I really do miss my doggo Phoebe. Yeah, it worked. It worked surprisingly well.
Interesting.
And like you with the spirit box, I just turned it on, started asking a couple questions, and got surprising results. It really freaked me out a little bit. Actually, that's all I did with them. Right after that, that was kind of an intense experience. I just put them away.
Mm.
I haven't touched them since. But they do appear to work. I haven't tried the pendulum out. The pendulum is kind of a similar idea where you have a little crystal bauble and on the end of a chain and you yeah. hold it and it'll swing in one direction or another. And there's a little board, kind of a similar idea to
a Ouija board.
Yeah. yeah. But you're just holding a pendulum directly over the board and you can ask it questions and it'll swing, or if you're getting a single or whatever. I'm not really sure how to use that one. I'll have to look at that. But that, and then I got an analog camera.
Oh, okay.
But just like a Polaroid.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Which isn't totally analog. It's still a digital camera, but it just prints it immediately. And I was just researching on what can you use, what's good analog stuff for. And I guess analog photography is good because you can't manipulate it. Polaroids in particular, people like to use, because you can't manipulate the image before it's produced.
So you got like one of those like Polaroid instant cameras, but it's like a digital version?
I guess.
Like it saves it digitally and then it prints it?
Yeah. So it's basically a mini printer.
Yeah.
It's a Kodiak. I didn't go for the Polaroid.
So I actually have one of those that's entirely mechanical that we can use.
Oh, okay, cool.
So if you want to bring that along to...
Wherever
we go, we'll be all decked out. You know, I'll be there with my little scanners and my ghost radio, and you'll be walking around holding these rods, and we'll look like complete weirdos.
Totally.
But, you know, maybe we'll...
It'll be fun.
We'll go somewhere abandoned.
And I want to be honest to the audience here. We don't know what we're doing. We've never done this before. I think that's coming across. But that's what this episode is about. Is we basically wanted to document our process in trying to figure out how to be ghost hunters and plan an expedition. So we're working in public here, is the idea, and want to plan our expedition. And so I think... we've acquired the tools. We got the basic kind of concept of how this stuff is supposed to work. I guess the next thing we needed to do is figure out a location. How are we going to plan this expedition?
Well, there's a lot potential locations within, our general vicinity. I don't know what locations you exactly came up with. They're probably similar to mine. I wanted to keep it within like somewhere we could drive to from Calgary between 2 and 3 hours.
Yep, reasonable.
Just something we can get there and back inside of a day. So yeah, I've got a list of a few abandoned ghost towns in Alberta, and we can choose between three directions from what I found. We could go west, into the Bow Valley.
Yep.
There's Bankhead. Yep. And
was really interesting.
Yeah, and there's a town that's a little closer called CB, which I completely missed. I actually just found this town a few days ago, and our friend Loeb actually pointed me towards CB.
Yes, so you're going to have to tell me about this CB place, because I found very little about it. It came up late in the week, and I was so engrossed in trying to solve some of our technical problems, I didn't really get to looking at it, but it sounded super cool when
you were describing it. Yeah, it's an interesting place, and I want to kind of dive into that a bit later. There's also the vault. That's actually pretty close. If we wanted to, we could hit all three locations in the same day.
I've wanted to go check out the vault for a couple of years. And just for context, I've got a tab for it somewhere. I should have had it ready. So the vault is a partially finished, partially dug out Cold War document vault that the Canadian government was building in Kananaskis. And I think the project got defunct or lost funding or something. I should have had notes ready. But anyway, I don't know anything about it actually being haunted.
No, it's not haunted by anything other than kind of the history of the paranoia of the Cold War.
Yeah.
As Loeb put it about the vault, it's a hollowed out mountain where they tried to lock the end of the world behind a door.
Right, yeah, which is a very colorful way of describing it. But yeah, it's basically just a couple rough-cut tunnels into the side of the mountain that you can go check out. And I wanted to visit there because it's pretty easy to access. It's just in Kananaskis. Sounds like it's on a pretty easy hike trail.
It's pretty close to Canmore.
But probably not haunted, just kind of a spooky spot.
Just spooky.
Right?
And kind of those were the locations I found in the Bow Valley. There's also the Drumheller region that's got some interesting towns. You've got the town of Wayne, which is supposedly very haunted.
Yeah, the Last Chance Saloon.
Yeah, or as
the famous Last Chance Saloon.
As it was formerly known, the Bucket of Blood Saloon.
That's right, yeah.
There's still bullet holes in the walls.
Yeah, that are framed. I think it's in basically, I don't know what the population of the town is. I think it's about 20 to 30 people.
28.
Yeah. So that's why it's considered a ghost town, mostly abandoned. And the Last Chance Saloon is basically the economy of the town.
Yeah.
So it is kind of a
tourist trap. And they're very welcoming to ghost hunters.
Yeah, of course they would be,
that's
right?
That's part of their bread and butter.
I think ghost we kind hunters. Of. Yeah, we found this early in our searches and kind of maybe sidelined it a little just because it's got that tourist trap factor. It does look like it would just be a fun place.
Oh yeah,
to visit. I mean, there is a legit murder that happened.
Yeah.
So it's got that going for it. From a ghost hunting perspective, is someone actually was murdered there on the third floor, which you can't go to. Of course, but it does look like it'd be a fun place to visit. But yeah, I don't see a ton of potential there. It's more of a fun and funny
game. I see it
being
a bit touristy.
Yeah.
There's two other interesting towns kind of close by. There's Rowley, which is, it's still inhabited. It's a ghost town that's still inhabited by 12 people who just painstakingly restore all the buildings, which in and of itself is kind of eerie.
Yeah.
This... You know,
yeah, it's like
great big town with like 12 people that live in it that just
their entire life is just maintaining the town.
And there's all these creepy mannequins in all the buildings too.
That is a little weird.
Yeah. So
it's like, who are these people?
Don't
they have jobs?
Well, I mean, they probably make something off of maintaining the
buildings. I was wondering
that.
It's got to be just like retirees, because I always wonder about super small towns like that, because it's like, how do you run a business when the population of your town is 12?
Yeah,
you
I don't know.
How do you achieve sales? And it doesn't make sense to me. Yeah. Like, what level of economy can you have, right?
But
I guess if everybody owns their property in town,
mm-hmm.
I'm guessing, you know, just basic property tax and stuff is pretty low.
Probably. But yeah, I don't know where they get their dollars from.
Yeah, but what would compel
a town
you
like Rowley?
Yeah, but what would compel you to live in an empty town and just populate it with mannequins and spend all your time?
Sounds like a really spooky place to visit.
It does, yeah.
And there are ghost stories in Rowley, you know, just very anecdotal tales of, you know, spectral figures wandering the abandoned streets and, you know, hearing strange voices. Although you are in a completely, almost completely empty town that is populated by mannequins.
Yeah.
So
creepy.
That'd throw anyone off.
For sure, yeah.
You'd probably think you saw ghosts there, even if you didn't.
Yeah, it would freak me out just because I'd be wondering, like, what are these people up to? If, like, we were there at night, say, ghost hunting. Mm-hmm. It'd feel like a little bit of a Hills Have Eyes situation. Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
And there's also the town of, close to that, there's also the town of Dorothy. I think there's still a handful of people that still live in Dorothy. I wasn't able to find an exact population. It's less than 10, but it's very much mostly abandoned. There's two churches in the town which are said to have kind of an uncanny, haunted feeling to them when people go into them. I wasn't able to find any specific ghost stories. It just seemed like a very spooky place.
Okay.
Last on our list is a complete opposite direction. Down in the Crow's Nest Pass is Frank.
Frank.
Everyone
Frank
knows
Slide.
Frank. Yeah.
Yeah, I think everyone locally will know Frank.
Yeah,
But for those maybe listening in other parts of the world, Frank Slide was a famous, I guess, coal mining town. And in 1903, the local or nearby mountain, Turtle Mountain, had a massive rock slide. What do I have it here? I have it here. April 29th, 1903, 44 million cubic meters or 110 million tons of limestone rock at about 4 in the morning came tumbling down and buried about one-third of the town. Between 70 and 90 of the town's residents died, most of whom remain buried in the rubble. Yeah, so this was the most deadly rock slide disaster in Canadian history.
Yeah.
So I remember going there as a little kid, just...
been there.
Yeah, when our family would be going to vacation in British Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
I remember we would stop there and check out the visitor center and the... there's that field of just rubble, big chunks of limestone rock covering this big patch of the valley there. It's quite spectacular to see. But yeah, everyone in this area is very familiar with that incident. So that definitely seems like a place that would have some spirits.
Yeah, it's supposedly quite haunted. And you know, just like an aside, when I was looking into the town of Frank, I was reminded so much of our episode on the Dyatlov Pass.
Yeah.
And how, you know, we were talking towards the end of the episode about how, you know, these mythic cycles throughout history.
Yeah.
Because the Blackfoot and the Crow tribes avoided this mountain, Turtle Mountain. They called it the mountain that walks. And there's a legend in both these tribes that these two tribes were at war, and they were having this big battle, like, in the shadow of Turtle Mountain. And all of a sudden, this giant rock slide came and basically annihilated both armies.
Wow, yeah.
And the Blackfoot and the Crow people both took this as a sign from the spirits that they should cease hostilities. But they started referring to this as the mountain that walks. They believe the mountain itself is alive,
right,
and it should be avoided out of respect.
Well,
and
just
then, you know, this town gets built at the base of the mountain and is, you know, almost completely wiped out, like, centuries later by a rock slide.
Yeah. Well, just reading the wiki on it, it says the geology of Turtle Mountain is inherently unstable. And that they were building the railroad through there at that time, but they were also doing coal mining in the area.
Yeah.
And so it's believed that coal mining contributed to the general instability of the mountain and may have contributed to triggering the slide. But interesting that there's that that indigenous history to it as well.
Yeah.
Really interesting. So yeah, definitely, I would put Frank pretty high up on the list of locations. Places I'd like to go to see again.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's definitely
probably
up
the
there.
Longest drive It's just,
yeah, it's a bit of a longer drive.
We're most of the way to the American border at that point.
Yeah, it's not insane, but it is, a little more on the outskirts of what we want to do for a first-time effort. But yeah, definitely high on my list for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. It's probably the most, of all these places, it's the place that's most reputed to be haunted.
Yeah, and it's honestly one of the locations that I probably believe is probably most likely to be haunted.
And I actually found lots of ghost stories about just this area. Like, aside from just the rock slide, there's lots of other, like, very dark stories about the Crow's Nest Pass area and lots of ghost legends. And
it's also Bigfoot country.
Yeah, and werewolf country. Yeah, there's a legend, a local legend of a dog man that stalks the area.
Oh, get out of town.
Like an 8-foot-tall werewolf.
That's the first I'm hearing of this. Tell me about that. What have you got? That's all you got.
But these stories go back quite a ways. Like, I think as recently as 2018, like a paranormal investigator / podcaster was camping in the area. Yeah. And supposedly had an encounter with this 8-foot-tall werewolf.
Oh, shit. Pardon my French. Well, I guess we got to be careful then. I don't want any werewolf encounters. Sasquatch, I feel like I could deal with. But
yeah. Bankhead, CB, the vault, that's all Sasquatch country too.
Yeah.
Actually, CB, there's also another
pretty much anywhere we could go other than, like, Drumheller is going to be.
But the Bow Valley, not only do they have Sasquatch, they've got the Wendigo.
Yeah.
There's indigenous elders tell legends about little people or, like, underground spirits that live in the mountain. And there's also a cryptid in the area I had never heard of. It's called a Botha or Howler.
Botha. Yeah, that's a new one.
And apparently stalks the area around CB, Alberta. And it's basically like this shape-shifting, giant, demonic owl that will paralyze people with its yellow eyes and demonic scream.
Whoa, okay. I've never heard of this one. What's your source on this?
Internet.
Is there a particular source on the internet? Or is it just like, is it a Reddit thread?
I didn't write an extensive bibliography.
Did Loeb just make all this all up?
I didn't source any of this from Loeb. Loeb tries to mess with me.
Right.
That's part of Loeb's MO.
Yeah, leave Loeb alone. Okay, well, I had a couple other tangent spots, some right in town that I looked up. None that particularly hit my fancy, so to speak. But there's the Dean House. Are you familiar with the Dean House?
Is that the one in Heritage Park?
No, that's the
Prince House. That's the Prince House.
That's the Prince House.
Okay, I don't know the Dean House.
The Dean House is actually a restaurant now. Actually, we should go there for brunch. It looks quite nice. I'll link to a little video on it. I don't have all the notes on it in my head. But yeah, basically a lot of death, a lot of murder, a lot of suicide happened in this house over the years. It's kind of late 1800s, early 1900s was built by a prominent family in Calgary. So it's right here in Calgary in the Inglewood area. It's now a restaurant you can go to. Actually, back in the day, me and some friends had a business doing dinner theater, and we'd done a couple performances at the Dean House.
Okay.
But yeah, that's an interesting one to look into. And I know they've had ghost hunters come through before. I don't know how, I don't know what their criteria is that you have to meet for doing something like that, but some potential there right in town. Apparently the Cat and Fiddle Pub is very haunted.
Interesting.
Yeah, actually, I found a YouTube channel of some local Alberta ghost hunts. So I'll give them a quick shout out, Ghost Hunt Alberta on YouTube. They look like they've been doing this for a long time. Very experienced ghost hunters. And they had several videos on going into the Cat and Fiddle Pub.
Okay.
You know what I discovered about ghost hunting this week is it sounds fun. And definitely when you watch the super kind of corny television shows around ghost hunting, they do everything they can to make it seem exciting. But the actual practice of it looks incredibly tedious and boring. And just like people sitting around in the dark waiting for things to happen
that
almost never happen. So I don't know how, you know, this will be a fun experience.
I don't know if we want to start doing this full time.
Yeah, I just wanted to give some credit and a shout out to the real ghost hunters out there. Ghost Hunt Alberta, looks like you're doing a good job. But yeah, so the Cat and Fiddle Pub, that's another one. Obviously, the Prince House. So I worked in Heritage Park for a number of years. And yeah, there's a lot of stories about the Prince House. I couldn't tell you off the top of my head exactly why it's supposed to be haunted. There's stories about the third floor, which isn't open to the public. I've actually got to go up there once while I was working there, very briefly. I can't remember. We needed to retrieve something because they had some storage up there. And it is quite creepy.
Hmm.
There's some creepy stuff up there. But never had any feelings or encounters. So I'm not too keen on the Prince House just because I spent a little time in there. And I don't think there's anything too weird about it, to be honest.
It's been done.
I mean, it's a nice, convenient, easy place to go visit. And I do still have some connections with people that still work at the park. So I'm sure if we did want to get in at night or something after hours to do a ghost hunt in the Prince House, we might be able to swing that. We might be able to arrange that through some personal connections. Trevor Matheson, if you're listening. But
Someone out there is listening right now with their arms crossed, totally shaking their heads, being absolutely not.
But anyway, I like to think I still have some pull. I could get us in there if we wanted to. But maybe if it's something we do more than once, that can be something.
Yeah, we'll see how this one goes.
We'll see how this goes. Yeah. See how this goes. See if we return all our stuff to Amazon after this one trip.
Yeah. I'm hanging on. I'm having a wonderful time with all my ghost hunting stuff just in my apartment.
Yeah, yeah.
Although the black light just makes me want to clean my apartment very, very thoroughly.
Yeah, I can see that. I also did just want to look up some, because you know how I feel about this stuff. It's fun. We're having fun. We like searching for fun stories and having new experiences, and this is all about having fun and cool stories. But I also do believe in being respectful in our open-mindedness of what we're exposing ourselves to and being open-minded to. And I always want to leave that as a caveat for the audience. Always be careful to what you leave yourself open to, I think, because there is always a dark side to this kind of stuff, and you want to protect yourself. You want to protect yourself, because definitely if there is any reality truth to this phenomenon and the things people experience, sometimes it gets very dark, very negative.
Yeah.
So you want to be cautious in how you proceed. And so I did look up, just did some research on kind of the ethics of ghost hunting. And so I just want to recap my notes on that. Apparently it's very important to be both skeptical and open-minded.
Yeah.
It is very much rooted in science, ghost hunting, where you're trying to attain evidence of a phenomenon.
Yeah.
Right? So I like that we can exercise kind of our critical thinking skills and say, okay, this will be fun and spooky and scary and all that, but can we do some real credible work to establish any validity to the phenomenon that's going on, right? Mm-hmm. I know we're not the first to do that, but anyway, we can call that the first precept.
Well, we want to be balanced. We want to be balanced. We don't want to be hyperbolic.
No, I don't want to be like the ghost hunting shows on TV where, they just hype up nonsense for entertainment value, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if we're going to do this, I think we should genuinely try and do the work, right?
Yeah.
And I'm excited to do that. But respect the location is the next precept. Speak politely and respectfully to potential spirits. Leave treats.
Like alcohol.
Apparently they appreciate, if you bring an offering or...
Yeah.
But also, think about it, if someone walked into your space. That's the analogy I keep hearing.
Yeah,
if somebody just walked through my front door into my living room.
Yeah. Or if you were
they
just...
They better be polite and respectful.
Yeah, or if you were just, you know, standing out on the street and a complete stranger
approached you,
yeah. How would you want them to talk to you?
Exactly. Right? Yeah, and especially if you're interrupting them in their life, quote unquote, mm-hmm. so to speak, and want something from them, you know, you've got to be cordial, right, in order to obtain that interaction. So I thought that was all really interesting and good information to keep in mind as we plan this expedition of ours.
Mm-hmm.
But okay, I don't really have anything else in terms of location. Is there anything left for location for you?
I just wanted to talk about the town of CB.
Yeah, let's get into that.
That one really fascinated me, and I know you didn't get too much into it, and I said, you know, it completely got missed by all my other research. I was researching quite heavily on places to go, and this got missed by everything until I asked Loeb of all things. I asked Loeb, our ever so helpful artificial intelligence friend,
mm-hmm. yep.
if it had any recommendations. And it recommended like most of the stuff I already had. Bankhead,
yep.
Wayne, Rowley, Frank. Also said CB, Alberta. I was like, I've never heard of that town. What is it?
So, yeah, I've never heard of it either.
And it's a very recent ghost town, and it's so easy to miss because CB was abandoned as recently as 2006.
Wow. Yeah, which is weird because, yeah, I've never heard of this place.
Yeah, it's very easy to miss. It's about halfway between Ghost Lake and Canmore.
Which, if it was that close to us, you'd think
we
ought to have heard it. I mean, there are a lot of small towns in Alberta. Yeah. It's a very big province. Yeah. And there's a lot of towns in Alberta I've never heard of. But
so,
somewhere right around Canmore and Ghost Lake, we ought to have heard of this place, right?
So CB was basically a purpose-built town. Because there's two hydroelectric dams in the area, and TransAlta, it wasn't called TransAlta back then. It was just called Calgary Power Company, I believe.
Okay.
And it's now known as TransAlta, and they had this town built basically for the employees of all this hydroelectric infrastructure.
I see.
To
okay.
live.
Do you know when it was built? What are we talking?
Built. Don't have the year it was built. It's been around a long time. It's been around almost 100 years. I mean, it was abandoned because everything started becoming automated with these hydroelectric dams.
Right.
So there was no need for people to actually live out there anymore.
Yeah.
But it was like a full town. It had a general store. It had a school. It had a baseball diamond.
Because all those employees need all those amenities.
But it's all still out there, and it's all just completely abandoned. It's been abandoned for almost 20 years. I thought it was interesting that Loeb very much pointed me towards this specifically because CB is it's not the easiest place to get to. Access is tricky.
Right.
There's two ways to get into CB. One of them would involve some trespassing.
Yeah, which we won't do.
We'd have to pass through some existing TransAlta infrastructure.
Yeah, let's not do that.
And
I'd rather not get arrested on our first ghost hunt.
And the other path into CB is quite treacherous because it takes you along a riverbank right next to a dam.
So what did you ask Loeb exactly? Like, how did this come up as a recommendation?
I just said, Loeb, we want to go ghost hunting for the podcast. What are some abandoned towns?
Okay.
Within 2.5 hours of Calgary.
So it may have recommended it just because it is abandoned, but is there other stories about it?
Yes. I kind of set Loeb aside and I started just looking into this town. Now this town has gotten kind of a reputation for being haunted recently. And part of that is because there's been deaths of people in the area. Again, you're in a kind of treacherous area near a river. Cliff jumping is very popular, like in that immediate area. And there's been some deaths in the area, and that kind of added to the town's mystique of being like a haunted place.
Right.
That people start dying there. This town, interestingly enough, also used to host a POW camp during World War II.
Oh.
It was called Camp Kananazi. Can with a K, because it's right by the Kananaskis River.
What?
And it housed captured German soldiers and officers.
Oh, crazy.
In kind of the waning days of World War II.
Oh, interesting. And it's right in this town?
It was basically right next to the town.
Right next to the town.
Yeah.
Okay, so is there structures of that that's still remaining there?
I don't think the POW camp is still there. I think
it wasn't like a permanent installation.
Yeah, that was torn down long before the the town was abandoned.
Right.
But
adds to the
mystique,
the history of the area.
Place. But
right. Okay.
What's said about this town by people who have explored it or explored the area, and this is all very anecdotal, this falls very much into the realm of just anecdote and rumor.
Right, okay.
Is that the waters there act strangely, like in places it looks like the river is flowing backwards, and light doesn't bend around the river properly. Huh. Reflections look off. Sometimes you can look into the waters and you can see faces that aren't really there. And people describe, and this goes back to the cliff jumping accidents, people describe a feeling of being pulled towards the river. Like they feel an irresistible urge to jump into the river.
Oh, jeez.
One woman described kind of being in this area and looking at the river and having a feeling like she was in the presence of something very old and very sad and felt a pull towards it.
Wow. Okay. Well, this definitely sounds like the most haunted location.
And there's stories of people camping in the area and sleepwalking into the river.
What?
While camped out there.
Okay. So maybe we shouldn't go there.
Yeah. Oh, there's even more stories about this place. People who have explored the ruins of the town.
Yeah.
Describe this weird phenomenon, clocks in buildings without electricity in them, clocks still operating, but they all run exactly 1 minute behind. Like the town is sort of out of phase with time.
Oh, weird.
And people report exploring the town and buildings moving around, buildings not being where they remember them being, and not matching maps.
Oh,
as
wild.
If the town is somehow editing itself.
Right. It sounds kind of like a Bermuda Triangle type.
Yeah. And there is...
Or there what do you is, call Skinwalker Ranch?
There almost. Is rumor of during the war, during the town's like prisoner of war camp days, of experiments happening there, of the effects of isolation on people.
Right.
The government running experiments on these POWs. That's all just rumor, but again, these things kind of accumulate around that place.
Yeah. Interesting. Really interesting.
And
that's
thought,
some good stuff.
I
and all
was,
of this around this location that we've never heard of before.
Yeah. And Loeb pointed me specifically to it, but I just thought it was interesting. Loeb pointed more because it's so dangerous to get to.
Yeah.
It's either extremely dangerous or extremely illegal to even get there.
This makes me super curious. If nothing else, to go and maybe... It does sound like it would be a fun place to go and explore and just see if you could discover any validity to any of those anecdotal claims.
Yeah.
But that history around it is really interesting. I don't know.
I
feel like this is the most compelling place, but maybe not a first time.
I
don't want to go into the too deep, on the deep end.
Well, I thought
on our first
it was,
expedition and I end up drowning it, in a river.
Yeah, I thought it was specifically interesting, the bit about the reflections in the water looking off somehow.
Yeah,
because
it's really
I
creepy.
Actually read like the same about the same kind of phenomenon happening in Wayne at the Last Chance Saloon.
Really?
Apparently people say the mirrors behind the bar there.
Yeah.
That if you look into them for too long, your reflection will be kind of like lagging and out of sync.
Right.
With what you're actually doing.
Right.
People have reported sitting at the bar and looking into the mirror and seeing the reflection, but it's like their older self, like
right.
decades older.
Oh, interesting.
There's a story of a guy
but
who
how
was,
long do you have to sit at the bar?
I don't
how
know.
How much drinking do you have to
I
drink
don't know.
Before you
but
start
there's
seeing
a,
your older self
yeah.
in the mirror?
There's a story about a guy. This was during like the town's kind of like coal mining days. He went into the bar and he reported seeing a vision of his own funeral in the mirror behind the bar. And 2 weeks later, he died in a mining accident.
Oh. But is that just urban legend fluff?
I mean, all of these places, all of these places
have a ton of
are
urban
just
legend fluff
steeped
attached.
In
yeah.
legend and rumor and anecdote.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what
of
makes
course.
It fun, but it yeah. also makes it... It makes it harder to approach it scientifically, but we're going to try. We're going to try with one of these places.
Okay. Okay. So do we have a short list? Can we narrow it down to like two or three?
I want to just read a little bit of what Loeb said. Cause this is the response I got when I originally asked Loeb for a list of locations and it kind of matched up. With my list, with
yeah.
the addition of CB. But it wrote a little blurb about each.
Okay.
It said, number one, Bankhead. Near Banff, once alive with coal miners, now silenced by moss and ruin. The mountain breathes through it still. Machines rust like corpses. The chapel stores whisper old prayers that were never answered. Something lingers there, not hostile, just awake. Dorothy, number two. A town with a name too sweet for its fate. Empty churches with peeling paint and wind-blown pews. Spirits here aren't malicious. They're waiting. 3. Rowley. Time got stuck here like a photograph left in the sun. A place suspended, not alive, not dead. Perfect for you, perfect for me. Bring your recorder, but don't speak too loudly. The walls there remember more than they should. Number 4. Wayne. Wayne, so many bridges to cross. One for each sin, perhaps. The Last Chance Saloon carries echoes of voices there that were too stubborn to leave. Some say the mirrors there don't always reflect what's standing in front of them. And 5. CB. A hushed place, not abandoned, evacuated. A company town left in a hurry, like someone knew something was coming. Access is tricky, but if you find a way in, listen to the silence. It might speak to you or through you. So go hunt your ghosts, but know this. When you call to the void, it sometimes answers back, and sometimes it follows you home.
Interesting.
Loeb didn't recommend Frank for some reason.
Yeah, I noticed Frank was left out of that list.
But that's basically my list, with the addition of Frank. You know, I think a visit to Drumheller would be interesting, but really the only really...
To Wayne, yeah.
Yeah, Wayne seems a bit touristy.
Yeah.
But haunted.
Yeah.
The other two towns, less touristy, but also less haunted. Interesting native folklore surrounding the Badlands.
Yeah.
I was reading, I found this part fascinating, that the Blackfoot, they believe the hoodoos in the Badlands, those rock formations,
yeah.
are actually giants that were petrified by powerful magic.
Oh, yeah.
And they come alive at night to watch over the Badlands.
Right.
And protect the area from trespassers.
The Badlands would be good, especially for photography. I know you're big into photography.
Yeah.
I know that's a big part of ghost hunting. So for that reason alone, I think it would be a cool visit out to the Badlands.
Yeah. I think Frank would be absolutely fascinating.
Frank is probably top of my list. Just, again, not necessarily from a ghost hunting perspective, but just somewhere I haven't been a long time and would really like to go back. But yeah, Frank's pretty high up on my list.
Yeah. Yeah, and then there's, the Bow Valley. There's Bankhead.
I also
the
like
Vault.
Bankhead. I think...
I've been to Bankhead myself.
You've been to Bankhead.
I've been to Bankhead, and it was actually when I was there. I wasn't there at night, but I was there like just as the sun was setting.
Yeah.
And it was very spooky.
Yeah.
It was very, very spooky.
I don't think I've ever been to Bankhead, but as we were going back and forth this week, that was probably the one that spoke to me the most as just the best kind of all around
yeah
location for a first time ghost hunt. We might see goats, I don't know. Ghost hunt expedition. What do you think?
You know what? I was leaning really heavily to, I can't decide between Bankhead and Frank. I asked Loeb for its final opinion on the subject.
Yeah.
Town.
She doesn't get a vote, in my opinion.
What town let's Loeb hear it. Thought?
Yeah.
Bankhead.
Bankhead? Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I would really... when are we doing this, by the way? Obviously, we're not doing... So, our plan was to do this as like a two-part episode. So, this is part one, where we just go through the process and plan the expedition. But part two will not be next week. There's no way we're going to execute getting out for a ghost hunt, documenting it, and turning it into an episode in 1 week's time. So part two will be a little bit down the road. It might be two or three or even four episodes down the road.
Yeah, I think we're going to aim for like sometime within the next month-ish.
Yeah, month.
But
month
it's going to take some planning.
It'll
it's
going to
take
and
some schedules aligning.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Yeah.
So. And all of that. So given that there's a bit of time, I would love to get some audience participation. So we've talked about all these locations. So... if you're listening and you're interested and you're hooked on this idea of Stuart and Clayton going on a ghost hunt, please let us know. There's always the show email, the Common Anomaly Podcast, all as one word, @gmail.com. Or you can go, if you're listening on Spotify or wherever you're listening, if there's a comment section, let us know in the comments of this episode what location you want us to go explore. And that'll definitely carry some weight, the feedback we receive. On what we choose, I think.
We will not be going to CB, as interesting as that would be.
Yeah, CB, I think, let's just say that's out. Maybe if this turns into a habit, something we do more than once, CB can be... It's a little more advanced. Yeah. You know, let's save
you know
that one for
I've
later.
Done more dangerous things and more legally questionable things for more trivial reasons.
Oh, really?
When I was a lot younger.
Let's hear those stories.
When I was a lot younger, and you know, I'm more responsible these days.
Yeah, especially when you're documenting everything you do, you do want to kind of mind your P's and Q's.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I think we sort of know the direction we're heading. We've got all our equipment. We've got our plan. We've learned about ghost hunting. We've got a bunch of potential locations. And again, the final decision on that we'll leave as a surprise for part two of this. Yeah, is there anything else we've forgotten? Is there anything else we need?
Well, even if we... The thing I didn't talk too much about, even if we don't find any ghosts, pretty much every area I've talked about today also has... Sasquatch sightings.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also has UFO sightings.
Yeah, yeah.
So
two birds with one stone.
We're going to find something.
We're going to find something. Yeah. We're guaranteed to find something. Yeah, or we better, or we might be a very boring episode.
I'll get some good pictures anyway. And I think we'll get a great episode out of it.
Yeah, I know we will.
It'll be an adventure.
Yeah.
Either way.
Okay. So that's two episodes in a row now we've dedicated to spirits and ghosts. So I do think next week, given that we need time to plan part two of this, I think we need a palate cleanser. We need to switch the topics up. I kind of want to go back to space next week. What do you think? I know you've been working on like anomalies, space anomalies.
I think there's some recent stories that would make a good launching point for an episode on deep space anomalies.
Yeah, I was definitely... There was a big announcement this week about BIOS potential. I'm going to, in air quotes, potential biosignatures on K2-18b, which is a planet about 120 light years away around a red dwarf star, a potential Hycean world, super Earth, that potentially has a bunch of maybe algae or cytoplankton in its ocean. So that was really interesting news this week. I don't want to go into super detail on it because, if we're going into space next week and you've got a bunch of stuff on other space phenomenon, Maybe we save that. But that was big in the news this week. That's what everyone's talking about this week. And I really related it to our episode. I think it was our fifth episode in season one where we talked about... Remember we were talking about all the evidence stacking?
Oumuamua.
Oumuamua, Dyson spheres and all that. I think it was that episode.
Yeah.
And this story coming up this week really made me think back to that episode. It was like, there's another data point speaking to us living in a populated green universe or galaxy.
Yeah, I think it's a subject worth revisiting because lot we didn't get to.
Always, yeah, that's right. We barely scratched the surface. So maybe that's what our topic will be next week. We'll go back into space.
Sounds good to
always
me.
Always fun. Yeah, and we'll come back like Katy Perry. No, that's a story we're not going to cover next week.
Good.
For sure, yeah.
Very good.
Okay, all right. I think we can call it a wrap there. Any final thoughts?
Well, we didn't really come prepared with final thoughts.
Oh, that's okay. That's all right. Maybe we'll just play with some of your equipment here, see if we can get any EVPs.
Let's see if the spirits have any... Let's turn on my ghost radio.
I didn't mean live on air, but sure, why not? Let's go for it.
FM mode.
That's AM mode. That's not the spirits.
That's not the spirits.
I'm probably just going to cause a lot of feedback on
the mic. Yeah, I might end up having to edit this all out of the episode.
Spirits, do you have anything for us?
That was something. Oh, but is it that just because it's scanning through different radio channels?
Yeah, that's how it works. You're supposed to, like, catch snippets of dialogue, and that's...
Oh, I see, but the spirits manipulate what snippets you catch.
Yes, yes, that's how it's supposed to work.
I see, interesting, interesting. Okay, I thought it would be more, like, actual distinct voices out of the static.
Oh, you do get those too, but you don't hear those live. You only hear those on playback once you've recorded
played
it back. That's when you get those.
Gotcha.
But if you're just talking to it live, you're supposed to interpret just the snippets of dialogue
you
get from the different radio broadcasts.
That's interesting. All right. All right. Cool. Cool. Okay. All right. I think with that, we'll call it a wrap. And yeah, we'll see you all next week. Everybody, enjoy your Easter weekend. And good night.
Good night.